Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, Denny Griffin here, and for the next half hour, I'll be your host for Meet the Author. And today, my guest will be Dr. Deborah Mandel. Dr. Mandel is the author of the book, Dump That Chump. And we'll get into that in a minute. The doctor has been made appearances on national TV shows, including Tyra Banks, Today Show, The Early Show, The Morning Show with Mike and Juliet. And starting over, my big, fat, obnoxious fiancé. And she's also appeared on The O'Reilly Factor, MSNBC, and Inside Edition. She's hosted her own radio program, has been a guest on over 300 radio shows. Doctor, welcome to Meet the Author.
Hey, how are you?
Fine this morning. I was able to read your book, and I wasn't sure, to be honest with you, I thought it's probably a chick thing, and I wasn't sure I'd like it, but I really enjoyed it. And I found that I was able to relate to some of the surveys you did, you put in the book about rating, your significant other and, potential that they are chumps and so forth. And I related that to some of my prior relationships.
Well, I'm glad. I definitely did not. This is not a male bashing book in any way. It's not against.
Right.
It's not against men. The truth is, though, that publishers like books that are geared toward females because females tend to buy self-help books in these genres more than males do. But it could have easily been called "Dump That Chump" or "Chumpette."
Okay. Before we get further ahead, let me just, if we have anyone who's interested in calling in with a question or comment for the doctor, you can reach us at 646-478-0982, 646-478-0982, and also if you're on my website on Blog Talk Radio in my chat room, you can text a message to us and we'll handle it that way. Doctor, what prompted you to write this particular book?
Well, let's guess. You think I ever had a bad relationship myself? Actually, yes, it's both personal and professional. I mean, I've been in the field now for about 20 years. I've specialized in relationships, and I've worked with so many people who are in negative, dead-end, self-destructive relationships. And I can certainly relate myself because I would say well into my 20s, the guys that I would pick would be guys who had great peacock feathers on the front end, and then they turned out to be really big losers on the back end. And it wasn't so much that they were abusive or hateful people. It's just that they did not have the maturity or the interest in actually having a relationship that could actually work. So I was doing all the work, as one of my therapists once said to me. He says, Deborah, you are always playing both sides of the tennis court. You know, you're running, you're hitting the ball that way, and then you're running across the fence and hitting it back. You just have a guy who just maybe shows up and watches, but you're doing all the work. And
mm-hmm.
That's what a lot of women and men end up doing, is they end up in a relationship that's dominantly one-sided. They're doing everything. They're putting all the energy into it. They're putting the love into it, the respect, the kindness, and they're getting either nothing back or very little.
And between your personal experiences and also your professional experiences, you've encountered both mental and physical abuse situations, I assume, right?
Oh, yes, mental, verbal, psychological, emotional, they're all kind of lumped in together, as well as physical, even sexual abuse. You know, you have some guys who, you know, they can't hear the word no from their partner either, you know, when maybe somebody's had an abortion or something like that, where, you know, they can't be sexual for a while and the guy will just not let them go.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and those are really the worst of the worst. You know, when you have the people who are actually abusive, and I make that very clear in my book is not enough to help somebody through an abusive situation. You probably most likely need to get emergency help and or professional psychological help right away, because those kinds of relationships can turn out to be very dangerous, if not deadly.
Let me ask you, when you're working in your career as in dealing with these, I'm going to refer to them as victims, do you ever get personally or emotionally involved with some of the situations you encounter?
Well, over the years, I've gotten better about that. I'm certainly when I first started, excuse me, when I first started out in the field, I worked a lot with teenagers who had been removed from their homes due to sexual violence, different kinds of abuse, or they've already been on the streets, promiscuous, drug abuse, blah, 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 and I would work with them very intensely in a residential facility. And I used to go home crying after the end of the day. I felt so bad for these people. But then I learned to really develop a professional boundary, which allowed me to be very compassionate and understanding, but recognizing that I can't really be helpful to people if my empathy is so intense that I get lost in their own situation. So I have to be able to be objective and be able to recognize that while this is tragic and sad, there is hope and there are things that somebody can do to remove themselves from these situations and to get better. And I have to be very careful with the word victim, because a lot of times while people may perceive themselves to be a victim, they're really not. They have a lot more choices and options than they believe that they do, but they're living as though they're still like a young child in a trapped situation, and they're not really taking action in the ways that they could to get into a better place.
So some of it, some situations are, in fact, where the person who's tangled up with the chump has escape possibilities if they choose to exercise them and
yes,
to get out of that relationship for the better. And in your book, you have a 9-step program that to guide people who are find themselves in that type of situation, how they can in fact get out of it. I don't want to give away the details, but could you very quickly go through the steps that you've the types of things that you put in the book?
Oh, absolutely. You know, the first, before we even move into the steps, somebody can really identify whether they are with a chump or not, because I really do encourage women who are reading this book, or men, to identify yourself as well. You're not just assessing the behavior of your mate, but you're asking yourself, hey, maybe I might be the chump or the chumpette. You know, sometimes we like to point the finger at somebody else when, in fact, we might be the one that's misbehaving in the relationship. So it could really be an eye-opener for somebody to read the book and go, ooh, uh-oh, I got some things I got to work on myself. So it's really identifying first if you're with a chump. And then, of course, the first step is how to dump that chump. And I give some very structured and specific ways to dump a chump, because a chump is not the same as a good guy or a good gal that you're parting ways with because you have differences that just can't be reconciled, like you've decided you've dated for a year and, you know, the guy definitely doesn't want children and you do. You know, that relationship is not going to go anywhere. It doesn't mean that the guy's a chump or you're a chump. It just means that it's probably not going to work out. And that would require a lot of respect and really a more compassionate kind of breakup. But when you're with a chump and you want to get rid of him, it's got to be cut and dry. You've got to figure it out and know how to do it. And I give 3 different kinds of scenarios how to work that out. And then the actual process really starts for somebody to start healing and making room for Mr. Right. Excuse me, I've been suffering from a little bit of a cold, so I'm sorry about the cracks in my voice. So then we move on to transforming self-downers into self-uppers. And, you know, a lot of people, the reasons that they stay in negative relationships is because they have these belief systems that are quite negative that keep them stuck in a place where they're never going to find a positive relationship because they are just too down on themselves. Things like, I don't deserve to be loved, or I'm an inadequate partner, or I'm not level. You know, all the things that people do that are really, really negate their self-esteem. So I give some tools on how to transform those self-downers into self-uppers. And step 3, do you want me to just go through the list of steps?
Yes, please.
Okay, step 3 is no more pining for, romanticizing, or fantasizing about the chump. That is another way that people stay stuck in a negative relationship. They've broken up 10, 15, 20 times, and they keep getting back together. And believe me, I know that one. That's what I did with one guy. I think we broke up maybe 15 times in my 20s. We just couldn't part, and we couldn't be together. But there was no way that we knew how to just really let it go, and I certainly didn't, because I kept sitting around thinking the minute I lost him all the wonderful things about him instead of why I was not wanting to be with him anymore to begin with. You have to really learn how to transform those things that we fantasize about somebody into something that's more reality-based. And then another really huge key to moving forward is learning how to move from mad and sad to glad. You know, have you ever gotten over a really bad flu?
Mm-hmm.
And are you happy about it or are you sad about it?
Getting out when I'm feeling better, I'm very happy.
Yeah, okay, because it's how you frame what it is that you lost. You lost the flu. The flu is gone. You don't feel regretful, remorseful, or sad about that. You're not angry about it. You're, thank goodness, that flu is gone. Well, when you're with a chump, I want people to think about this as not like losing your grandmother's pearls, that's a precious gift that she gave you, but you're really getting out of a relationship that was toxic. You know, it was like a bad flu or a really bad cold. So to sit around and think about how sad you are about it, you really don't need to be that sad about it. I'm sure there's some reasons to be sad and some things that you're losing that were good, because most relationships are not all bad. But for the most part, if you're moving into territory of being free and clear of a bad relationship, it's time to be happy. And then I help people go from learning how to be completely focused on somebody else, which is a chronic problem for people who end up with chumps and chumpettes, is they're too focused on the other person's needs, and they lose sight of their own, and they don't know how to care for themselves very well. So I help teach people how to give themselves the loving that they need, and so that they're less dependent and reliant on somebody else to nurture them. Now, after all, it's not as great to give yourself a hug as it might be to get a hug from somebody else, but it's still a lot better than beating yourself over the head with a hammer. Do you agree?
I certainly do.
Okay. Hammers don't feel very good on the head or the hands or anywhere. Hugs feel better even if it's coming from your own self.
Right.
Then step 6 is accepting your own screw-ups. And I really do mean this. It's not a punitive thing, but it's that so many times we leave a relationship and we want to put all the blame on our partner to say, oh, if he had been this, 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 it would have been better and I didn't do anything wrong and blah, blah, blah. The reality is relationships generally take two to tango, and there's something that you did that contributed to the demise of the relationship or to ending up actually being in that relationship to begin with, like missing the red flags, ignoring the red flags, not being alert to bad behavior from the beginning, continuing to put maybe the cart before the horse, like, okay, well, I'll get more intimate with this guy, and then he'll change. Well, you know, people don't change because they got more intimate. You are who you are. Unless somebody wants to change, they're not going to change. And so that's a way that women and men who are in negative relationships need to really look at how they've contributed to their own problems and suffering in their relationships. And then this is the much lighter part of the book, which is called Step 7, and it's called Time to Party, Be the Birthday Girl. And what I really want to encourage people to do when they're in a breakup program, because it is so tempting oftentimes to either get depressed or sad or to want to get back together with the guy, is to really know how to get out there and say, you know what, it's my time to really indulge in my own self, to give myself extra TLC, to really recognize that I can celebrate myself and who I am. And then, this is a huge key for a lot of women, this is called sexy and single but no sex. Because women are notorious for listening to a guy who, you know, he romances her, he seduces her and says, you know, I'll be in this for the life, you know, let's please have sex, blah, blah, blah. And she says, I don't really want to. And then she says, oh, but I don't want to lose him. And then she does. And now all of a sudden, generally, when women have sex, they have already decided they're in a relationship. And he really may not be up for that. So you have to be really careful when you're out there dating that you're not going to jump right back into a relationship where you haven't really assessed who this person is. And then step 9 is where I give tips on teaming up with Cupid, because sometimes Cupid goofs, and we have to understand what the downfall is of just trusting just pure passionate love versus really being smart with using our brains too as to how we pick a good mate.
I took an analysis of myself. You have an evaluation survey here. I believe starts on page 57 of your book, and to determine whether or not your significant other is a chump.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to be honest and evaluate myself,
uh-huh,
what I thought of myself. And I think I was pretty honest with when I took it, and I ended up with a 7.
Well, very good. Then
isn't, you know, not perfect, but not necessarily a real bad guy either. So
no,
but,
and
but
you know
I
what?
See,
I call those in the book situational chumps, because it just means that your chumpiness comes out now and again in a situation that probably most people don't behave that well in.
Mm-hmm. But I believe if I'd have taken, I don't want to necessarily get into age here, but had I taken that survey 20 years ago, it could have been a little higher.
You might have had a different story, huh?
Absolutely, yeah. I was a little different individual at that point. I think I've mellowed possibly and gotten smarter with age.
Yeah. And a big correlate of chumpiness is maturity. You know, it's not so much, that's what I'm saying. Chumps are not necessarily bad guys. You know, you have to be a really high-level scoring chump to be considered mm-hmm. probably one of those abusive types or somebody who you really want to run for the hills. But generally, chumpy behavior doesn't necessarily mean someone's a bad person. They're just not going to be a good relationship partner because
mm-hmm.
they don't really know how to do that give and take.
Doctor, what I'd like to do, is I'm afraid I'll forget, so I better get to it now. I want to give out, or let you give out, any information such as websites or where people can get your book or learn more about you. So I'll give people a chance to grab a pencil and paper, and in a minute or so we'll get back to that, and you can give out any information you'd like.
Great.
About how people can learn more about you or your books. In the meantime, I probably... Well, I don't know. You may not want to get involved in this particular question, which is fine to say so. But I used to be a cop years ago, and one of the things that always puzzled me, and probably any current or former police officer who listens to this has encountered a similar situation, domestic calls.
Mm-hmm.
Most cops don't particularly like those because a lot of times you can't really resolve them.
There's
a major argument in progress, and sometimes both parties will turn on you. they can be dangerous situations. But the point I want to get at is I had one couple that I remember specifically, and again, I'm going back now 15 or 20 years with this. But it was... weekly might be a little not quite accurate, but I'd say a monthly situation where somebody would have to respond to this particular residence.
Mm.
And we're talking, in some cases, some pretty major violence. Normally, male and female, although the female at times could get out of control herself. At any rate, the bulk of it was this guy, when he got a few drinks in him or several drinks in him, he was very violent, and it always ended up in a physical altercation.
Mm.
And I used to wonder, and some of the other guys I worked with, we on occasion talked about that, say, why does this woman stick with him? She'd get out of the hospital, for example, after a real major incident, and, you know, press charges, we'd arrest the guy, and blah, 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 and then she'd... All of a sudden, they're back together, and they don't go to court. And I remember coming into work early one morning and had a call, and this guy finally shot the woman with a shotgun.
Oh, no.
And she survived, although as a vegetable, and then he took his own life. And certainly that was tragic, but would you care to get into any explanation of why, when the situation is that bad? I'm not talking about somebody where you just maybe don't get along or don't,
sure.
you know, don't want to have children or do... But somebody that's that abusive and a situation that volatile, what would make someone want to stay in that? Or maybe they don't want to. Maybe they just can't help themselves. I don't know.
Well, there's actually more than one explanation, so we'll get into a couple of them. I think, first of all, a lot of the women, we'll just go, you know, male violence against women right now, but believe me, there's a lot of women who have become quite violent against men as well, so I don't want to be sexist here, but... taking your situation, a lot of times it's, if you trace back in somebody's history, the abuser has also possibly been a victim of abuse or was a bully type already in his youth, and the woman has often been involved in an abusive family of origin, so that her tolerance for abuse and mistreatment is much higher than somebody who, let's say, had a more loving, more functional family background. So they're already kind of ripe for one another to get attached to each other, kind of like broken souls, internal victims, and then they're in these situations where he plays out the role of being the dominant one, and she plays out the role of being the victim submissive one. And I know it seems really sick, and why would anybody consciously want to choose this, but it's usually a much more unconscious process where the person actually becomes, you've heard of Stockholm Syndrome, I would imagine.
Yes.
That's where a victim becomes loyal to her abuser, and that's often what's going on in a battered spouse situation, is the one who's being battered, they end up actually feeling sorry for the person who's abusing them and feeling to blame for why they deserve the abuse to begin with, and so it all makes sense to them in the end, why they must then redeem themselves and show and prove that they can be the perfect spouse to this, to their partner, and they feel like they're entirely at fault for why they're getting beaten. So that feeds the beater's sense of entitlement that he can keep doing that, and she continues to believe that she deserves it, and therefore the stakes are much higher. She can't necessarily leave, because then she feels like she really is a bad partner, she's a bad mate, she's a bad wife, so therefore she has to prove to him and prove to herself that she can be a good and loving and do it perfectly.
Okay.
Pretty overwhelming, huh?
Yeah, it's. I guess you're looking at it from the outside, you know. But then when you explain it that way, and so some of the, again using the male on female perspective here, some of the women, possibly because of their environment when they were growing up, maybe think that type of relationship is normal, if they've been from a family where abuse took place and so on.
Right, and they're actually coming from the position of, oh, like maybe their dad abused them, and they're thinking, oh, this is like I can prove myself to my husband that I am a good partner, like I never could prove to my father that I was a good daughter, so because my father kept beating me, but this time I can have another chance. So I will unconsciously pick somebody who's very much like my father, who's going to treat me the same way, but this time I'm going to win. I'm going to conquer it because I'm going to do the right thing. I'm going to prove that I'm lovable and that I deserve to be treated well. But it really never happens, because the reality is that the person who's violent is responsible for their own violence. It's never okay to be violent with somebody. Of course, I can understand in certain self-defensive situations, but he's not defending himself. He's perpetrating.
Scary stuff, isn't it?
It is scary stuff, and I know what you mean, because I think I was like something 22 and 25, and I lived in an apartment while I was going to college and in graduate school, and right below me there was a similar situation. It was actually next to me. There was a batterer living there, but he wasn't married to these women. They would come in and out, like every 6 months there would be a new one. And I actually did call the cops on this guy several times, and he eventually moved. I don't know that he ever figured out whether it was me or not, but they were very loud, and it was in a condo complex. And I was like, spent many nights fearing that this one of these women were going to get killed. It was really traumatic.
Okay, well, I appreciate your addressing this. I don't want to, dwell too much on that extreme aspect of it. Can you give us your website information or any other contact information you'd care to
add? Oh, absolutely, yes. It's www.drdebraonline.com. That's drdebraonline.com. And there's links to, where you can buy the book. You can buy the book from me. You can buy it from Amazon. I also, it was fully in all the bookstores, but the last couple bookstores I've went to, they seem to have been sold out. So you can still get it from there. You have to order, or you can get it right from me or from Amazon. And I've got lots of other products as well, which I hope people will take a look at by going to my website, and all different kinds of arenas.
And if they buy the book from you through your website, it would be autographed, perhaps?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes. And as a matter of fact, specify that on the order of who you'd like me to autograph it to, and I will absolutely do that.
Right.
And there's special deals on my website, too. You can buy certain things and get a free CD and, different things that I have as well.
So the website is worth the trip and can be browsed, and they'll look at not only Dump That Chump, but other stuff.
And you can take the test.
Time.
Are you with a chump? You can take the test from some of my other, if you're, what kind of workplace relationships you have, and healing the sensitive heart, and different things, creating healthy boundaries in the workplace. Oh, and by the way, I have a new book coming out in October.
Yes.
called Don't Call Me a Drama Queen.
Okay.
And that's for the overly a guide for the overly sensitive and their significant others on how to lighten up and go with the flow. A much-needed book for many partners out there.
And that's going to be in October.
That's right, in October.
Great. Maybe after that comes out, you'll come back on and we can discuss that book a little bit.
I'd love to.
And what was behind it or what is behind it. Okay, is that... Now, can somebody email you or send you a message through your website? Is there a contact?
Yes, there's contact information there, and it's a fully functioning website. Get you right to me.
Okay, great. Now, I want to emphasize, too, again, as I mentioned to start with, if we have any men listening to this or listen to it later on the podcast, this book, I don't believe it's exclusively for women. As we said earlier, I enjoyed reading it, and I learned quite a bit. And, in fact, I'll probably refer to this book from time to time and also will not hesitate to tell some people I know, both male and female, that maybe they ought to check that chump survey out and see what they think about their particular situation.
That's right. No, it definitely, like I said, it's not meant to be a male-bashing book. It applies both to men and women. It's just that the publishers are always saying that it's the women who buy these books. So, hey, guys, get out there and buy more books, and then
right.
We'll write them more to you. You know, what else is really fun about this book that, I had a really good time writing it, is that I put these quick recipe guides at the end of each chapter. So that if you read a chapter and it makes sense to you, but you want to keep reading through the book, and then you want to go through and actually do the exercises that are recommended to help you really move through this process more quickly, then you can just refer to the back of each chapter and find a little quick recipe guide for step one, and then there's one for step two, and it just gives you a summary of what kinds of things you can do to work on that section of the healing.
The next book, is that going to be written similarly? I mean, is there going to be any similarities in the layout of the book and the content or how you arrange everything?
Well, different publisher, so not exactly, and it's a different subject matter, so it has its own little, it definitely has assessments and quizzes and exercises and examples and checklists and all that kind of stuff, but different
okay.
publishers, so a slightly different style.
Doctor, we're down already to only a couple of minutes to go, and because we get quite a few authors or aspiring authors in the audience, I'd like to close with you giving a couple of tips about writing in general, and any advice you'd like to give to an aspiring author.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, it was a really interesting process for me. You know, I'm in a slightly different situation, having been trained as an academician, being a psychologist, so I learned how to write, you know, from a research perspective and more academic-focused. So I had to really change my voice when I learned how to write in a self-help style, which was a great, great learning experience for me. I really, really loved the transformation. But I think the most important thing for an author is to find your voice, you know, find your specific voice, what your style is, and kind of really develop that style. And if you're a really soft-spoken, compassionate style writer, that's fine, but then really play that up. If you're a much more dynamic, kind of in-your-face, but don't be aggressive. I don't like aggressive styles myself, but, you know, maybe that works in some arenas, but not in self-help. It doesn't tend to work that well.
Right.
You know, to really find that voice and, you know, whether it's to be more humorous and playful. And I think I'd say that my voice has changed a lot in the last 5 or 10 years, you know, and I think I really found my voice now. And so this book and this next book, I think, have much more reflective of my personality. Although I would say that the other ones also are, they were just more fitting to what I was dealing with at the time I wrote those. So I think we're always evolving. Go ahead.
Sure. Do you find, or did you find that you also need to persevere? In other words, I know myself, I've written a few books, and sometimes you can get, I don't know if you want to call it writer's block or whatever, but maybe things aren't going that well, or you're distracted or something, but you got to hang in there and get back to it. You can't just give up.
Absolutely. I think one of the greatest things I learned was I went to a community college writer's workshop right when I started getting into this whole process, learning about how to get published and all that. And the lady who was doing the seminar for that hour, she said, "You know what? What do writers do?" And people, "Well, I guess we write." She said, "That's it. Writers write." So, writers, you know, write. You want to know what writers do? They write. So if you're having writer's block, doesn't matter. Sit down and write. Write something. Write jibbly, jobbly, garbly goop. It doesn't matter. Just put some words out there, and eventually
it
unblocks it. And don't do what I did when I first had to write my dissertation. I tell you, it was the most interesting things. I had one of those perfectionistic, insane dissertation chair people, and it didn't matter what I wrote. She picked on everything. So I went to a writing consultant. I said, I have 150 first sentences for my dissertation. He read them all. He says, "They're all fine." He tossed them up in the air, and he said, "Pick one. Close your eyes and pick one. Now start writing." And it was a great lesson.
Great. Oh, I guess. Doctor, we're in fact over time. Now, what happened was the live streaming shut off, okay? But what we're talking about now, what we've talked about for the last minute or so, will be on the podcast. So anyone who does the playback, we'll hear the entire interview. Nothing will have been lost, okay?
Excellent. Okay, wonderful. Thanks so much for having me on.
Well, thank you, and keep in touch. Love to have you back in October whenever that new book's out.
Perfect. Okay, take care.
Thanks, Doctor.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And my thanks again to Dr. Deborah Mandel, author of Dump That Chump. And we'll talk to you next time on Meet the Author. Have a great week.